Every day, a battle is being fought between people on both sides of extinction. On one side, traders of rhino horn who seek to gun down one of Africa's most iconic animals for a horn more valuable than gold. On the other side, a coalition of communities, scientists, volunteers, and security forces aligned to prevent the unsustainable loss of Africa's black and white rhinos. Today's guest spends every day on the front lines of this battle, and she's here to tell us the story of two incredible rhinos, both critical to the future of their species, who persevered in a fight for their lives. Everybody, I'm your host Joe Sills, freelance journalist for outlets like National Geographic, Discovery Channel, Lonely Planet, and every other outlet around the world that is competing with each other but won't pay me enough for my loyalty. Today's guest is an ecologist with a background in game management. She studied some of the oldest plants on the planet. She's monitored wildlife like lions, rhinos, cheetahs, and she works in one of the most remote areas of South Africa. She spends about 10 hours every day working in the bush and experiences surreal wildlife encounters on a regular basis. Her name is Nadia Bierslaw. She joins us now. Hi, Nadia.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Doing good. First question is the Afrikaans last name. are we somewhere in the range?
You're in the region there. You're just putting an R in there that's not supposed to be there. It's Bierslaw, not Bierslaw.
Sorry, I do like beer.
Well, then if that's going to help you pronounce the surname, then it's okay.
Thanks a lot. So this is a really exciting episode. Listeners are going to know that we're actually live, which is really cool. The idea behind the podcast was sort of to go around the planet and do these kind of interviews.
That's cool.
Yeah, but of course it's expensive, so we can't do that. But we are live today. We're sitting here together, and if you hear some background rustlings and things, it's because we're at a rhino orphanage. The rhino orphanage.
Yeah, the very first one.
Very first rhino orphanage in the world. We cannot tell you where on the planet it is, other than it's in South Africa.
Yeah.
So that's it. Obviously, with the rhino poaching trade and everything going on there, a very sensitive area. And so for security reasons, everything we talk about today, we're not really going to have a location that you guys can go look up. You just have to use your imaginations.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
It's the best way.
So, Nadia, talk to me about your morning. You just came in. I saw you come in the Land Cruiser, and you had a couple of volunteers with you. What did you guys do?
Yeah, well, we departed at just after 6 o'clock. We went straight to try and relocate one of our orphan cows that just popped out a baby a week ago.
Amazing.
We've only had tracks so far, so we're really trying to get visual and see if it's a bull or a cow that's she popped out, but so far no luck. And then we continued on following up on the rest of our rhinos. There are residents and orphans on the property that we need to monitor. Mm-hmm. So I locate them every single day, make sure they're all accounted for, no serious injuries, that they're happy. That's by monitoring their behavior. So we had a very successful morning, saw quite a few of the rhinos of the population. We bumped into some of the lions as well. We bumped into the cheetahs as well.
Casually.
Just casually on the route for the rhino relocation. That's the best part about working in the bush, is you never know what you're going to get around the corner.
Yeah, so it's important to note that these rhinos that are now released, they're not actually on the property of the orphanage. They're in another location that's not on the grounds. So there's a whole wildlife reserve area where some of them are at.
Yeah.
So talk to me about what this experience is like for you to bump into the rhinos that came here as orphans, and now they're out in the wild where they're supposed to be.
Well, you know, it's a great feeling, to be honest, to see them so content in the natural environment that they're supposed to be in and not in a boma or any such as what they are at the orphanage. So it's really nice to see them content and interacting with the resident rhinos and even with some of the other orphans that they used to be friends with back at the orphanage. So it's really nice to see them like that. And just like I said, the integration with the resident rhinos, you now have orphans and residents that's best friends that never would have been friends because they never would have met. But it's really great to see it. It's the way that it should be. And it's rewarding. It's very rewarding to see that and to be part of such a project.
Okay, so what's interesting to me here is that before coming here, I'd only ever seen rhinos in a zoo. And it was the Memphis Zoo where I worked in college. And we just had one.
Yeah.
And so it never occurred to me that rhinos have friends. So
yeah,
talk to me about that. They actually, like, they have a social group. They have friends.
Yeah, they basically actually have, like, best friends. So it could be one rhino or maybe two or three rhinos. But they form such close bonds because they are social animals at the end of the day. So they need that social interaction. And it's also just to help each other out, to look out for any potential danger or threats that could be in the area. So on a rhinos form extremely close bonds. I don't think actually humans would understand a bond as such, except for maybe a mother and a child type of bond.
Yeah.
But rhinos form best friend bonds and they look out for each other. And the only time that they will split from each other is either when a cow becomes pregnant or when a bull starts to become dominant and wants to mark out his own territory. It's the only time they'll split off from each other.
So I think when people are thinking about rhinos in the wild, they're like thinking open grasslands and maybe there's a rhino like grazing. Some people think they eat impalas. They don't, obviously.
No, they don't.
Only eat plants. They're nice in that regard.
Yeah.
But they all as well have different personalities.
Yeah, they definitely do. Yeah, so when we released the orphans onto the property, we conducted a behavioral study on them. So we followed them for a whole year and spent 10 minutes watching one rhino, and we had criteria that we had to note down for whatever the rhino did, be it scraping against a friend or doing a spray or any such things. All these things are little notes of them trying to like tell us a story and such. So we followed them for the whole year and check their behavior and everything, and like it's really nice to like see them like interact and all those kinds of things. So these guys adapted really well because they forget stuff about the bush. They forget there's dangers like lions and elephants that's larger than them, or even like the other rhinos, the resident rhinos and such. You know, that was at the time of release much larger than them. So it was very interesting to note all these things. So we're continuously doing it. We're done with the study, got all the data that we need. But it's still important to continuously make sure that they are happy in their environment and such things.
So your job is still to this day to go out and monitor as many of these rhinos as you can find.
Yes, it is. It's unfortunately the time we're at now in conservation where these species, and it's not just for rhinos, it's a whole bunch of other species as well. They basically need like a glorified babysitter to an extent, if it's like the best way to explain it, basically. So we need to make sure that they're all accountable and safe and everything like that. And if there is an instance where maybe there's an intrusion of poachers, we can pick it up early and make sure that everybody is okay. And if there is the unfortunate event of a poaching attack or so, we are there right there and then so that we can relocate the poachers immediately and not lose time in trying to relocate them, because these guys move fast. They don't hang around. So it's important to keep an eye out on these guys, on the rhinos now specifically, every day.
How serious is the poaching crisis right now?
It's very serious. It's very, very serious. It's very heartbreaking that we actually have to have institutions like the Rhino Orphanage where the orphans can go. Like, they get a chance at a second life, but it's really sad that people are butchering these guys basically to extinction for keratin that's the same as our nails and our hair. And it goes to East Asia, and there they grind it up into a powder or such and use it for different things, aphrodisiacs, aphrodisiac, help them to cure cancer and cure a hangover. Like, it's ridiculous reasons why they poach the rhinos. And I feel like in today's time, like, we don't really actually know how many rhinos are left in the wild.
Yeah.
But these guys are pushing for extinction because the less there are of the animal, the more expensive the commodity becomes of their horn, which has basically no benefit.
How often do you think about the gravity of the situation when you're out in the bush and you see one of these orphans that is now released?
Quite often, to be honest with you, more so during the full moon period. We call that the poacher's moon or the blood moon. Mm-hmm. That's because the poachers don't need any flashlights to walk around in the bush. It's light enough for them to be able to see where they're walking and if there's potential dangers and to locate the rhinos and such. And so that's that time. It's the full moon period that's it hits me the hardest. Like, it's in the back of my mind all the time when I drive. I know that I can potentially bump into a poacher or find tracks of somebody that's not on the property that we know of. So it's always in the back of my mind, but more so when it comes to full moon time.
What would you do if you encountered somebody, or has that already happened?
It luckily hasn't happened, but for me, I would just immediately pull myself out of the area, mm-hmm. get myself to safety, and if I have people with me on my vehicle as well, it's my responsibility to keep them safe. So I would just get myself out the area and report it to the Reserve Management Department and anti-poaching and let them do the groundwork of relocating these guys. And then what I will do is I will take one of the anti-poaching guys with me and we'll start relocating rhinos, making sure everybody is still accountable and so forth. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. We're going to talk to you a little bit more about some rhinos in the bush, but before we do that, we're going to take a quick ad break now.
Hello, Get Lost Podcast fans. It's your girl, Mark Green. You might remember me from our Rhino Rescue episode a while ago. This week, Joe is on location with me in Africa, and he asked me to read out this ad to you, so here it goes. When we're bouncing around the safari truck for science, you can usually find Joe eating apples or pointing a giant camera lens at wildlife. If you know the show, you probably know that he's just a former pizza delivery guy, and he cannot afford to own a giant African safari lens for his camera, and that is why Joe uses lensrentals.com to get the gear he needs for expeditions like ours. Right now we have a Nikon 500mm f5.6 to get those close up elephant and lino photos from a safe distance. And if you are someone that needs a badass lens for your own photos, you should use lensrentals.com to do the same. You can get 15% off your next rental by using promo code GETLOST15 at lensrentals, or click the link in our show bio to learn more. Remember, promo code GETLOST15 at lensrentals.com. Now back to the show.
And we're back. Okay. So, Nadia, I want to talk to you a little bit about why you decided to become an ecologist and why you decided to basically spend most of your adult life in the bush.
Well, you know, it came down to, I've always been a fan of animals and everything, but when I was about 8 or 9 years old, my parents took me to the Kruger National Park, and we saw all these amazing animals. We were very fortunate with the sightings that we had, and I just totally fell in love. And I basically asked myself the question of, imagine working with these animals one day. Mm-hmm. And I pursued it, and now I'm answering the question on a daily basis when I go out into the bush. This is why.
Yeah.
This is, imagine it, and I'm doing it, and it's one of the best. And I've never tried to veer off the path and thinking, no, you know, maybe conservation is not the job, there's no money in it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about the passion and the determination. It's not about the money for us. Then I went straight from high school to university, studied nature conservation, did my diploma on that. I got appointed at a private game reserve to do my student year. Then I became a permanent staff member. And then about 3 years after, then the director of the Rhino Orphanage approached me and asked me if I would love to do the rhino monitoring permanently, as they're planning to release some of the orphans back into the natural habitats. And I jumped at the occasion. I could not say, no, give me a day to think about it. It was a no-brainer, basically. And then when I started doing the work for the rhino monitoring, I decided to also pursue my bachelor's degree in nature conservation.
Mm-hmm.
So I finished with that last year, and now I'm a qualified...
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. So it's not that I exactly wanted to go for ecology or ecologist, but anything in nature, basically. So I'm a conservationist, and that's what I strive to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have a moment one day in the field where you're like, holy shit, like, I'm really living this dream, I'm doing that?
Basically, my very first day as a student on the reserve, mm-hmm. going out doing the monitoring of all the animals, mm-hmm. that was basically my moment when I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah. This
you
is.
You had a conversation with yourself.
Like, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. This was totally worth it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Like, I've been to the park and been to like nature reserves and everything, but it's different when you go visit it as a visitor and mm-hmm. being actually a staff member in that environment. It's two totally different things.
In what ways?
Like, as a visitor, like, you enjoy it and everything, but you don't see the brunt work or the hard work that goes, or the efforts that actually goes into conserving a species or an area or something.
Yeah.
But now, being a staff member in that environment, you get it. You understand the hours that goes into it, all the hard work, the blood, sweat, and tears, and that makes it worthwhile. You know, at the end of the day, you can go, I did something good today.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that note, I want to talk to you about the blood, sweat, and tears, because we went on a drive yesterday, actually, and we were monitoring rhinos, and basically just gave me a window into your world. And then I come back to the orphanage, and I see these two very special rhinos here named Manala and Impi.
Oh, yeah.
And I've actually had the chance to go collect their poo for science.
That's a win.
Yeah. So now I have a very intimate connection with these rhinos as well.
When it comes to the poop, yes, it is.
Yeah, it's quite an experience. But their story is really incredible, because it's a mother and a calf, and really a really remarkable thing. And you were there to witness all of this happen. So can you tell me the story? And take your time and just tell me everything you remember about this incredible encounter.
Yeah, sure. So I had just come back from my off days and started like straight back into work, started relocating the rhinos, and I came across the crash that Manala was a part of and realized she wasn't there. And the rhinos were very relaxed. None of them were anxious or any such things. And one of the girls that was monitoring the day before from the orphanage, they helped me out when I go on my off days. I phoned her and I'm like, I'm real sorry that I'm bothering you so early on your off day, but are you sure you saw all four of these rhinos yesterday? And she's like, yeah, Nadia, I'm 100% sure. I'm like, okay, well, Manala's missing. I don't know where she is. She's just gone, but it's okay. I'll have a look, see what I can find.
Yeah. And this is a crash of rhinos that they're all best friends.
Yes. It's a crash of four rhinos, yeah. Mm-hmm. So they never basically go anywhere without the other. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time looking for them. And after about 2.5 days, I came across an open set of plains and I saw a rhino in the distance. And I just prayed to Mother Nature, be like, please let it be Manala. Please let it be Manala, because I don't know where to start looking for this rhino anymore. Mm. And it's not a chance or an opportunity that she could have been poached, because her friends were fine. They didn't have any injuries or any such thing. So my mind didn't jump to that. And the reason why I never actually really thought of her being pregnant or having a calf is because our dominant bull is a bit of a dummy when it comes to making babies. So, you know, my mind wasn't going to that either. So I didn't know what to think at the time, actually. And on this Wednesday afternoon, it was about 6 PM, actually, I saw this rhino in the distance and I was just like, oh, Mother Nature, please let it be Manala. Because I had the dominant bull there earlier and I was like, I'm going to be very angry if this is the dominant bull again, because he was here today and he walked another direction.
Yeah.
And I got closer and closer and I'm like, it's starting to look a lot like Manala. And then I saw this very small ball of something next to her and I'm like, please let it be a calf and not a warthog. That's fooling my eyes right now. And as I got closer, this very, very tiny rhino calf jumped up and I basically lost it. Adrenaline took over my body. Emotions took over my body. I was crying. I phoned the director of the orphanage in tears and I was like, well, Ari, she had a calf. And he's like, I knew it. I told you she had a calf. I'm like, yes, woman, I told you it was going to be a miracle baby if she had a calf, because the dominant bull can't make a calf.
Yeah.
And
he's not the best with that.
No, unfortunately, he's not. Finally, I calmed down a bit, because I first had to get control over my limbs. I was shaking too much. I couldn't get out the car. So I supplement feed them as she gave birth to this calf in the dead of winter. So the nutritional value of the grass is not that great at that time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So got out the car, gave her some pellets, called her over. She came straight over to eat, and this calf was just basically independent from the get-go. She walked like away from her mom, came to my car, sniffed it a bit and everything, walked a big circle around her mother and everything, and she was just the cutest little thing. She was also the smallest baby I'd ever seen in my life. She walked right underneath her mother's belly without even scraping against it.
And like, all this is like 6 p.m., so the sun is going down on the horizon, and it's probably like the most beautiful thing.
Yes, it was, and it was very cold as well, so that also didn't help my shaking and all those kinds of things. And so yeah, she was just an absolute bundle of joy, this little calf. She was a fighter from the get-go. She would fight with her mother. Her mother accidentally the one day stepped on her side toe, and when she got her foot out from underneath her mother's foot, she ran to her back leg and just started fighting with the mom's leg, like, you just stepped on me, you hurt me type of thing.
Yeah.
And she just wanted to basically fight with everything. I would feed Manala, and Wartox would come and try and sneak a couple of pellets, and Impio had none of it. At this time, she didn't have a name. She decided her own name. I just chose the most appropriate word for it. And because she was such a fighter, I thought Impi was the best thing. It means Zulu warrior. And she really is. She might not be a Zulu, but she's definitely a warrior.
Yeah, she's fighting off. I mean, she's, what, a couple days old?
She was, at that time, like 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's still very tiny, though. But very boisterous, very energetic. So she would just, like, try to have a nap, and then these Wartox come, and she'd jump up and huff and puff at them and try and, like, hit them and everything. And,
if you guys can imagine, like, what a baby rhino looks like, you can go on the show's Instagram, Get Lost Podcast, and see. But they basically look like four-legged E.T. with a little nubby horn, you know?
Yeah, that's basically the situation, yeah. And then also Manala, she fought with the dominant bull, and she cracked the front of her horn. So she would often get branches stuck in that piece of her horn, and that was like the best enrichment for Impi to like get a control of her legs and to engage with her mother and everything. Because the mother doesn't really play with the calf. She'll just take one swing off the head and the calf will go flying. So so this little calf was just like all over the show. After like 3 days old, she was surrounded by four sub-adult lions, and luckily these lions were still a bit dumb when it comes to the hunting part, and they were also very wary of the Manala and her size and everything. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't try anything, but they were hungry. So, and lions are opportunistic hunters as well. So
you're monitoring, and you see these sub-adult lions come in, and are you thinking like, oh, this is something to keep an eye on, or this is trouble, or everything will be fine?
No, this is trouble. I sat with them because I called them over. I didn't see those lions at first, and tried to call them over to come and eat, and they didn't want to listen to me. So I'm like, why aren't you guys listening to me? Mm-hmm. And Impi was very tired and everything, and I drove a little bit closer to them. I started going into the bush, and then one of the lions popped up, and I realized what the situation was. So I rang one of the girls from the game management department, and Vicky, and I asked her, please, can I have one of your two of your guys to help me out here so we can get these lions away from them?
Because so at this point, the lions are, they're keying in on Impi.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And you could see also Impi and Manala was really tired, so I don't know how long they was actually standing there for with these four lions. And we eventually got them chased off. It got to an extent where we were like, we're going to have to shoot something, like a wildebeest or something, for them to eat to get away from Manala and Impi. Mm-hmm. Which we then did, and those four females had a nice meal, and Manala and Impi got to get away and go hide in some thickets. And then everything went well until about 3.5 weeks into Impi's life. And I monitored to check them in the morning, fed them, spent some time with them, and then continued on with the rest of my monitoring. But because she's a new calf, I finished my monitoring and I go back to them just to make sure, see where they are, how they are and everything. And as I came up to the plains, I just saw Manala and Impi and two other rhinos with 12 lions lying around them, just watching them.
Holy cow.
And then I knew, well, this is big trouble. This wasn't a situation where I could just go, okay, well, you know what, nature needs to do its thing. I'm going to like pull out, go home, have my lunch or whatever. I knew this was a situation where I needed to be there the whole time.
These lions had backup.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I was thinking strength in numbers, because then so I had two other rhinos and then another two boys come and join Manala and Impi, and the boys took one look at the situation and went, nah, we're not going to be part of this. So they walked away. Wow. Joey and Ntombi, the other two rhinos, decided they're going to take a nap and just had a lie down there in between the lions and the rhinos with Manala and Impi. Then I thought, okay, well, now we have a problem. Mm-hmm. So I phoned the guys from the game management department again, explained the situation to them and said, please, can we maybe just shoot another wildebeest for these guys just to get them away from Manala and Impi? And at that time, I didn't realize Impi had already been bitten. She had already been attacked. So I missed that whole part, which I actually think to an extent might be good for me that I've missed it, because like I'm even getting a little emotional talking about it now.
Sure, yeah.
Because I probably would have gotten to that extent that I would have driven over a lion. And, you know, like that wouldn't have been very ethical of me.
No.
But in that moment, I would have just been so angry at them. I'm actually still so angry at them for what happened back then. But...
And wait, before we continue, let's just to clarify for the listeners, like what the reasoning is behind a wildebeest and everything. And wildebeest is lion's preferred meal.
Yeah. Right?
And then if they do actually successfully get a rhino, it doesn't do any good.
No, it doesn't. Because, like, they attempt to hunt the rhinos, even the adults, and they always fail. Their eyes are always bigger than their stomachs because the skins of the rhino is so hard, so it's really difficult to actually get in there to get to all that meat. Mm-hmm. So they're just opportunistic in that moment, and then they, like, get over it. But with Impi, that was a small calf. It was an easy target. It was a soft target for them.
So you all know all this, and this is going through your head, and that's why, like, the anger and the rage comes out, because... It's not exactly like nature taking its course. It's, for one, even if these lions do successfully down Impi, it's going to be hard for them to even do anything. It's just a waste of this critically endangered species. Yeah.
And she was also so small, so like some of them would have eaten and the others would have just watched. So it would have also been futile for them to kill her. So at the end of the day, I think it was more just the thrill of the hunt than actually killing her at the end of the day and eating her. I think it was just that thrill.
So let's dive back in where you're in this moment and things are really hitting the fan.
Yeah.
And you're like, I'm glad I didn't see this because I would have run over that lion maybe and all this. So... bring us back to that.
Yeah, so then I was sitting there, was watching them, and I was waiting for the guys from the game management department to arrive so that they can go and shoot something for these lions, because obviously they were also hungry then.
Yeah.
But I mean, you've got 12 lions. They could be very successful with hunting then, so why would you want to try a flippin' rhino?
Yeah.
So yeah, these guys came in, and then like the movement started happening with the lions. Some of them started coming closer to the rhinos. Others started moving a bit off. So I told the guys that went out to shoot something, I told them, you guys need to hurry because things are happening here. And then there was a gap with some of the lions moving off, and there was one specific female, and I know it was that female that bit her. Where Manala, I could see in her behavior, she was starting to get ready to run away. She saw a gap that was an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I basically just shouted at her, go. It's now is your time. You need to run. I got you. Don't worry. And this female lion started running after them, and I started chasing after her. So you had rhinos, a lion, and then me in my open vehicle. I mean, that lion could have at any time decided to turn around and jump in my car and attack me.
Yeah, there's no roof. There's no
windows. There's no nothing. No. Yeah. And I chased the lion while she was chasing after Manala and Impi, and they ran into the thickets for some protection, and I got the lions off of them, the one that ran after her. And luckily at that time the guys were ready with the wildebeest for the lions, and they dropped it for them. They all started went and eating, and then phone calls started happening. I phoned Ari from the orphanage and said, this is the situation. I was in snot and tears, because after I got away from the lions, knowing it was safe for Manala and Impi, I went to them, and Impi just went to lie down, and all I just saw was blood all over her back leg. And I was just, then the realization set in that the scarf was seriously injured. And so I made phone calls. I phoned Ari. I phoned our veterinarian. I explained to them, this is the situation. She was bitten on her right back leg, right over the kneecap part. And unfortunately, it was too late in the afternoon to dart. It became a bit of a risk to dart them. With the drugs and everything like that, you don't know what the negative effects are and everything. And you don't really want a half-drunk, tranquilized Ryan walking in the darkness. It's a bit risky.
Yeah.
So what we did is... is we pulled all hands on deck, all the rangers and everything, all the safari guides, students from the game management department, and we divided all of us up and said, okay, guys, we're doing lion watch and we're doing rhino watch. And by the time we got all the teams together and everything, we had to go shoot another wildebeest for the lions because they'd already finished the first one.
And so they're just you're just basically buying time.
Yes, that's basically what we're doing. Yeah, it's buying time. So we dragged the lions with the kill far away from where Manala and Impi was, and everybody did shifts for 2 hours on, and throughout the whole night, 24/7, they did a watch. And the Monday morning, our vet Dr. Peer came in fairly early, and the operation started with darting her. Well, we darted the mother, Manala, and Impi was too small. We couldn't dart her, so we had to physically catch her with our own hands. So she is not a fan. So if we need to dart them to do x-rays or check her leg or anything here, she hates it when we touch her ears. So whenever we put the earplugs in, she shakes her ears and the earplug goes flying out, because that's how the veterinarian caught it, is the best way to do so.
The best way to catch a baby rhino is by the ears.
By the ears, yeah. Because you would be surprised, as small as what they are extremely strong.
Yeah.
So it was a bit of a wrestling situation, but we also needed to be careful because she is fragile. Her leg was extremely swollen and everything.
Yeah.
And she had a horrible limp and everything. So yeah, so the first treatment went very well and everything, and we spoke with Dr. Peard and asked him, like, what are our options here and everything, with should we move the two of them to a boma where they can be safe, or should we take MP away from her mother and move her to the orphanage?
Yeah.
And Dr. Peard was like, first of all, I don't want to move them to a boma because I'm worried because of the stress that they already have gone through and then will go through in that small confinement.
Mm-hmm.
Might make her dry up her milk.
Mm-hmm.
So let's first keep them in the bush and see how things go. And okay. He also didn't really want to take Impi away from his mother, or from her mother, because we don't want to naturally orphan a rhino. You know, in severe cases, it's a choice that we have to make, but in this case, they didn't want to.
So they bring Impi in to operate on the lion bite.
Yeah, so what we basically did with that is we gave her some painkillers, we gave her antibiotics for infections because a lion's mouth is very, very dirty.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put some, it's like a effervescent tablet basically, so we put that in the wounds of her legs, and it's effervescent, brings out all the gunk and everything from inside the wound to the outside. And then we saw that she was solidly bitten over her leg, and she was also had a bite mark in her neck as well.
Wow.
And when the veterinarian put his fingers in through the wound, I could see the glove on his finger through one of the other bite marks on her leg from the teeth, from the canines and such. So it was really intense to see all of that. So then Dr. Pierre told us, okay, you guys need to do 24/7 rhino watch. You need to watch them 24/7.
Yeah.
Make sure that they're okay and that Impi keeps up with her mother.
Yeah.
And then make sure, obviously, that the lions don't go bother them again. So then we pulled all hands on deck again, and we organized two people at a time, shifts for 6 hours long, and it was the coldest week in South Africa that week. Like, it just, the Murphy's Law had to be.
And it can get cold.
It can get very, very cold here. And so we all pulled together and we did these shifts. We took care of them. And luckily, for a few days, they went into the thickets, which Manala should have done from the beginning when she had Impi.
Mm-hmm.
It was unfortunately a mistake on her part going into the open plains with the little calf.
Mm-hmm.
So then, yeah, and then the doctor said that we will dart them again on the Thursday, which we then did. So everything went well, no issues with the lions and everything. But when it came to the darting on the Thursday, they were in too thick of an area because we never immobilized the mother to go and lie down. We only tranquilized her.
Yeah.
So we had a team of people that basically just walked around with her in circles while we were busy working on the calf.
This is just a checkup, right?
Yeah. Give us some more antibiotics, more of those effervescent tablets to wash out all the gunk inside her, the wound and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, unfortunately, because they were in this a difficult area, I had to pull them from the thickets where they were safe back into the open plains so that we could work with them fairly easily and not have any issues with Manala while she was tranquilized. Because they can also seriously injure themselves, tripping over something, stepping into a hole, or any such things. Mm-hmm. And so then we brought them back into the open, darted them successfully, treated the wounds and everything, and continued with the 24/7 rhino watch. And then on the Friday, the lion started bothering us again. And another thing that really didn't help our situation is the area where Manala was hanging out in the ridge, one of the female lions had a cubs close to there. And
so it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, no, definitely. And so she was slowly but surely introducing the scent of her cubs to the rest of the pride. So the pride was hanging around that ridge. So, you know, like you said, was a recipe for disaster. With Manala and Impi walking through there, the lion's just basically hanging out there.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, it just became a game for the lions to try and catch that little calf. And because they would want to try to do something to, like, catch her and kill her. Mm-hmm. But Manala was there, so they were very wary of her. So from the Friday, we had serious problems with the lions.
What does that entail?
By keeping them off away from them, because they were the amounts of phone calls I got going, the lions are here, you need to come. So we just ended up, for those last like 3 or 4 days on the property, we shot about 5 wildebeest for them. They made a kill themselves as well, just to basically pull them further away from the area where Manala and Impi is at. And it was full moon in that time as well. And so the one night that my friend Vicky and I were on a shift, we were on shift from 6 in the evening until midnight. Manala went down to go drink water and Impi was struggling to keep up with her. Mm-hmm. And Manala would just do her mission and then stop and wait for Impi to get to her. And as soon as Impi would arrive at the site, Manala would immediately start walking.
Yeah.
So Impi never really got a chance to actually rest and, like, catch her breath and everything.
Yeah, this is me hiking as well. I'm always Impi.
The one at the back. So we were very worried about that. But Manala, she's still a great mother. She still fended off the lions, kept Impi safe, and protected her at all costs that she could. In that period, for the 8 days that we were running up and down, I still had to continue the rest of my rhino monitoring with all the rest of the guys, because at that time I did neglect them a little bit.
Yeah.
Impi and Manala did need majority of my attention, but they also still needed my attention. So mm-hmm. I would work these like shifts from 6 in the evening until midnight, get home at about 1 o'clock in the morning, head out again at 6 in the morning, relocate my rhinos, go straight to Manala and Impi, check that, make sure that they're fine, give them some pellets, make sure the rangers are still fine if they don't need any food or coffee or any such things, do the rest of my monitoring, go back to Manala and Impi, quickly go home, have a lunch, and then basically do it all again.
So you're just like running ragged, burning the candle on both ends, so to speak.
Basically, yeah.
And what's your like mental state like doing this?
Oh, I was burnt out. I was very burnt out at that stage. But I still kept my head on straight, and because I still needed to think, especially with our very last night. On the Sunday, I phoned Dr. Pierre and Wim Ari from the orphanage, and I said to them that we can't carry on like this. We've been fighting off these lions for the last 3 days, and they're not stopping. They're not going to stop until they kill this calf.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the executive decision was made that we need to move both of them to the orphanage. It's the safest place for them to be. The girls are always here, so they have somebody who will always watch over them to make sure that they're fine, instead of a boma that we have on the reserve where I can only go view them. Like, I can view them at any time, but I still had my other responsibilities of the other rhinos.
Yeah. This is a major decision as well, because the orphanage is not really built for big rhinos.
No,
it's
no,
like
it's
a baby rhino place primarily. And,
yeah,
you know, it's to get them ready to go on.
Yeah, it is. So So yeah, we made that decision. We moved them back to the orphanage here, and Impy got some last couple of meds and antibiotics and everything, and then we released them into the Boma. Manala was still fairly drugged, so when she got off the trailer, we put food out for her at random places, mm-hmm. and she went straight for the food, and she didn't really actually even pay attention to Impy. Then it was my job to try and get Impy and Manala to reconnect with each other. Wow. But before I actually continue on with that, I must explain to you the last night that we had.
Yeah.
And the decision was made that Vicky and I will do midnight till 6, 7 in the morning, mm-hmm. until the vet arrived to come and do the darting and move them. And we just sat down. It was about 8, half past 8 at night, and we just sat down to have dinner when I got the call and said, the lions are back. They're bothering them again. We lost visual on both the lions and the rhinos. They went into a thicket, and we can't hear anything, we can't see anything, we don't know what to do. And I just looked at Vicky and I was like, here we go again, let's go. And we raced back to the reserve, looped a block in which they were, couldn't see or find anything, and we made the decision to shoot one last wildebeest for these lions.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy shot it, hooked it up to a strap, dragged it behind a vehicle and dragged it up and down. We took the guts out so that they can smell it much easier and such. And they were totally uninterested because they had so much food over the last few days that they don't need to eat.
So your one like card to play with them
is gone. Yeah, basically. And then Vicky and I sat there and we looked at each other and we were like, the only other option we have is a bit of an unethical option, is playing a contact call of another lion roaring, of like an intruder male coming into the territory.
What would that do?
It would make them to go and try and follow up, like, what's going on? We don't know this roar. We don't know this lion. Who's all of a sudden coming into our area, type of thing.
Yeah.
So we got the authorization. We got the go-ahead because we were also just right behind the CEO's house. Mm-hmm. So we phoned the COO and said, listen, can you just give an update and just let him know that we're going to be playing this contact call really loudly because we're trying to get the lions out. And they were like, no, everything's fine. Go ahead, do what you guys need to do.
Yeah.
Like, we actually basically got to a point with where he was like, you guys don't need to ask me for permission to go shoot something. Just go do it. Do what you need to do to get them away, to get the lions away from the rhinos. And then on this last night, it basically took that pride 2 minutes to like nonchalantly walk out the bush after hearing this contact call. Like, they weren't even really fazed, but they were like, we should probably like go and investigate what the sound is. Cause so then eventually, lucky, we got them out and we still had no visual on Manala or Impy throughout the night. It was only the next morning at about 7-ish when it started heating up and everything, that movement started happening, and we called them out and both of them walked out the bush. And it was just like the best relief I had ever felt in my life, seeing that little calf walk out the bush with her mom. And we waited quite some time for the veterinarian to arrive, because then in the meantime, Dr. Pierre phoned me and said, listen, I've just been tested positive with COVID. And we all like, oh my goodness, we were all working in close contact with each other when it came to working on Impy, you know, and we were like, what are the chances that all of us now have COVID?
Yeah.
You know, now we've got to think about that as well. Right. And because we work in isolation, you know, so we don't really consider masks or any such things because we work in isolation. And so now we had to think about this as well. Mm-hmm. And luckily, we all tested negative for COVID, which was a fun part about it, but not so much doing the test itself.
Just an added bonus to this entire experience.
Yeah, basically. And then, then this move went successful. Them settling in at the orphanage went very successful. Then it was my job to try and get Impy to go to Manala, because she was very feisty. She was trying to fight with me. So I had a bag. Yeah. So it's, you would be surprised how intimidating it is for such a little rhino run up to you
really
and go,
small. They're like only knee high, maybe. Yeah. It's really, really frightening.
Yeah, it is. And they can cause some serious damage with that little nub and horn of theirs. Don't get me wrong. Some of these girls at the orphanage have had some serious bruises on their legs. And it's a painful situation then. But eventually, though, like, Manala was just interested in her food. Impy wasn't really like paying attention to me. But after about like 2-3 minutes, then the two realized about each other, and then they got connected. And with both Manala and Impi and even myself, I'm sure we all three of us had the same feeling of, it's done. We are all safe. We can all have a good night's rest tonight and sleep through the night and not worry of, are they going to make it? Are the lions going to try again? Or any such things. And Manala and Impi settle in very well. They're basically living the life at the moment here at the orphanage.
Yeah, they're not too far away from where we are right now. But it's incredible to think that after all of this trauma and struggle and these battles with these lions, that they seem to know, like, this is safe.
Yeah. And it's also as if they knew that we were trying to keep them safe. Like, in the moments when we found the lions with the two of them, and I would just shout at them and be like, go. And it's like they know, okay, she's got my back. We can run away and nothing's going to chase after us and try and catch the little calf. And that was basically the situation. It's that Manala almost knew that, no, they're trying to save me. So she never even attempted, when I was racing after the lions, attempted to try and crash into my car or chase me off or any such thing. She knew I was there to help them. And that was probably also one of the most rewarding feelings in the world ever, is knowing that they trust me to take care of them. And then here at the orphanage, they're living the life. Impi has been darted a couple of times. We've done x-rays on her twice. And we realized at the age of 6 months old that rhino calves don't have patellas yet. We initially thought, when we x-rayed the injured leg, initially thought that when the lions bit her, they ripped out her patella. So then we x-rayed the left leg, and Dr. Johan Marais from Saving the Survivors was shocked, and he goes, Pierre, she doesn't have a patella. And we're all like, what?
It's
like,
no. No kneecaps.
No kneecaps. It hasn't formed yet. So very interesting. But then unfortunately, we realized that the lions caused more damage than what we had anticipated. Mm. And now Impi was darted about 3 weeks ago. And some of a organization that we worked with before, Animotion, came, took some measurements of her leg. And Impi is getting a knee brace.
That's amazing. So this is... The kneecap situation is a first discovery, right? Mm. So that's a new thing, new knowledge in the situation.
Yeah.
And then this will also be the beginning of a completely new knee brace.
Yeah.
For rhinos.
Yeah. So essentially our first initial plan was we even got human orthopedic surgeons involved on how can we do this, because every time Impi took a step on her leg, her top half of her leg would go one way and the bottom part would go another way. So it would constantly click out of place.
Yeah.
And then the thought was to first put a figure of eight in her leg with pins and everything. Mm-hmm. But then the human orthopedic surgeons was like, you know what, because she's still growing, you're going to have to do this surgery so often to adjust the figure of eight and the pins in her leg. Mm-hmm. So I would hold off with that for now until she's done growing and do an alternative option. And that was when the knee brace came in. So we're waiting. That should happen in like the next week or two, when Impi will be darted again and get fitted with a knee brace so that we can help out her walking.
Yeah.
Because she's really struggling with the injury. She keeps her leg in the air and it's going to affect the way her spine grows and everything. And because she is one of the lucky rhino calves here at the orphanage, she has unlimited access to mother's milk.
Yeah.
And also then to her mother's pellet. So she became really, really fat. She's got a couple of fat rolls and everything. So we had to reduce Manala's pellets because Impi eats too much of it and she's picking up too much weight for her age. And rhino calves pick up 1 kilogram each day for like the first few months of their life. So she was probably doing 1.5 to maybe 2 kilos a day. And
yeah, which is what I would do too. There was an unlimited supply of pizza.
Yeah, you're never going to stop. Yeah.
No.
So we had to reduce that, and we're keeping a close eye on them and everything like that. So and now they're happy, they're living a life, and it's very sad to not have them in the natural habitats again. And it's sad that I'm missing Impi growing up, but they're doing really well, and I would love to see the both of them back into the wild one day again.
Is that their future, you think?
Yeah.
So they'll be back somewhere.
Yeah. Not probably where the lions are, but we'll find a safe space for them where there are no predators, where they don't have to worry about that again.
What do you think the 8-year-old version of you that went to Kruger so long ago would say about the story you just told?
Would probably not believe it and go, like, just a shocked face of, that's something that you went through, that's something that you did. How did you survive without such little sleep and everything, you know?
Yeah.
That's probably, like, the questions I would have asked myself, but I don't think 8-year-old me anticipates it, the life I'm living at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I'm very happy with the choice I've made. I've never looked back. I never had a doubt in my life that this is not what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think 8-year-old me anticipated what I was getting myself into.
Yeah, you're literally fighting lions.
Yeah, yeah, basically. Luckily, not with my bare hands, because I will lose that battle.
Yeah.
But in the safety of my vehicle, yeah, I fought with lions, y'all.
I don't know how to end the show on a better note than that, but I can tell you guys, if you want to learn more about the Rhino Orphanage, you can check out their page on Instagram. I think it's just the Rhino Orphanage.
Yeah, it is.
They're the first in the world. If you're interested in actually, like, coming here to work with these animals, you can.
Mm.
You can volunteer to come work here. You have to pay your way and things. But there's a program that does that. It's called ACE, African Conservation Experience. They're on Instagram at Conservation ACE. And that's actually something we're going to talk more about on the show at a later date. But Nadia, thank you so much for joining us. How can people keep up with your adventures and follow some of the awesome photos you get while you're out?
Well, Joe, first of all, thank you for having me on the show and for allowing me to tell you the gut-wrenching story about Manala and Impi.
We're honored to have heard that story.
Thank you very much. I'm on Instagram at Nadia Marion. And you guys are more than welcome. Like, I don't post any photos. I basically posted my very first rhino photo like a month or two ago that I've ever posted on my social media, because I'm just so wary about the people that I have on my social media, because you never really know.
Scary, right?
Yeah. So the only photo of a rhino you'll see on my Instagram page is a rhino butt having a belly scratch on a termite mound.
There are lots of rhino butts, but that's important because it is a really serious situation. And there is real danger from organized crime. I mean, it's not just like a couple of local dudes that are putting people in danger. There's real, like, paramilitary
stuff. Yeah, it's basically a war that we're fighting at the moment. It's on the ground. It's a war at the end of the day. So then I would actually then also suggest everybody to go and watch a documentary called Struip, The War on Rhino Poaching in South Africa. And then that would, like, totally put everything into perspective for you guys on what we're actually going through on the ground here. In our national parks, in our private reserves, all those things. It's a tough battle, and you need to have the guts to be able to deal with this, because it's not for the faint-hearted.
No. What does the end of the war look like to you?
To be honest with you, Joe, I don't actually see it ever ending. There will always be a market for it. There's people trying to say, you know, we should open up the market and be able to trade with rhino horn internationally, because for some reason, locally in South Africa, it's legal, but it's illegal to trade with it internationally. And there are things like they tried doing, they said they call it flooding the market. And, you know, they tried flooding the market with ivory, and we're still fighting elephant poaching.
Yeah.
You know, so to be honest with you, I don't see it ending. I can just see us trying our absolute best to try and save these animals, create safe havens for them where they can live out their life naturally, breed naturally, little calves can run around and grow, and the population can eventually grow. Because at the end of the day, it's up to the orphans to bring the population back up to what we used to be back in the day. In the early, like, 60s, 70s, South Africa was under 100 rhino individuals, and Dr. Ian Player said, no, we are done. We need to bring the population back up. And then we came up to about 20, 25,000 individuals, and we're just dropping at a drastic rate again. So for me, it would just be to see safe havens and people giving it their absolute best. We all are laying our lives on the line. It's the most rewarding job, going out into the bush every day, even for the girls at the orphanage, you know, bottle feeding the calves and such. But at the back of our heads, we do also know that this is one of the most dangerous jobs in the world out there.
Yeah.
That we're doing at the moment. Yeah. So I don't think it will ever end, but it could get better.
Yeah. Nadia, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Joe. It was fun.